Mississippi State has, quite frankly, says a lot about them. And on one hand, I give them credit because they didn't wait and play with their food and say, we think we made the wrong hire, but we're going to let this play out because it's whatever. But I also look at it and say, you gave a guy 1 year who didn't have a chance to recruit, who didn't have a chance. Like, he was hired December 18th. You didn't give him a chance to do anything. And you've essentially made him the scapegoat for what is a lost season. A lost season that we all saw coming. Everyone outside of Starkville saw coming. So it says a lot about them in the sense they have this inflated view of themselves. Now, names that have been thrown around for this job, and the one that I think is the best fit that I think that they would get and that would actually do a pretty good job, there's Willie Fritz from Tulane. And the reason I say that's a good hire is you don't hire a splash hire in Starkville right now. You don't have NIL in place. You don't have this massive funding of boosters that are trying to pay, $8-9 million. You could probably pay $5 or $6 million for a head coach. You're still going to have to get NIL money, and you've got to get all the buy-in and recruiting. So it's what I would consider a developmental program in the SEC. And Willie Fritz has proven that he can go into developmental programs and win. I mean, Tulane was a 2-win team when he took over, and they're probably about to win their conference yet again. And it's most likely them, as long as James Madison stays ineligible, it's Tulane for an Access Bowl. They're going to represent the Group of Five in a New Year's Six Bowl. So Willie Fritz would be a really good hire from them. There's other names that have been floated, but like, is anyone really pounding down the doors to go into Starkville, Mississippi and take that job?
No. And I think Willie Fritz is the only guy, truthfully, that you can sell on the idea of Mississippi State. We talked about this last week, and I think Witt said it. Why would Willie Fritz leave a university who we know all too well how it started? He already felt like he didn't have the security at Georgia Southern, right? Tulane went in, offered him the security, offered him the contract to come be their head coach, and they made him feel welcome and comfortable. You're at Tulane right now with the playoff dynamic changing and the American Athletic Conference losing its two main horses to the Big 12 this year. You are the horse now. Like, you're the leader of the Group of Five landscape at this point with what you did last year and so far what you've done this year. They lost to Ole Miss, and at one point, that game was a one-possession game.
They were up by 7 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. I mean,
by they, I mean Tulane.
Yeah, exactly. So if I'm Willie Fritz, Mississippi State doesn't sell that great to me when I can stay here and I can be exactly what I am now and have a chance to play for a national championship, which is something that I don't think Mississippi State has the ability to get money behind and do so. I think that's the best hire. I think you've got to get Willie Fritz sold on that idea. The only other name I guess I could throw out there would be John Summerall, maybe, from Troy.
He's not going to take it.
I don't think he'll take it. I know Witt and I were talking earlier. They got Jamie Chadwell's name on the list.
He's not going to take it.
I don't think he's going to take it. What's the guy you like so much? Kane Womack?
Kane Womack?
From South Al? I don't think he'll take it.
But I'll let Witt talk in 1 second because I just wanted to add this to your point. The reason why I don't think any of those guys take it is because coaching is a career. They view it as a career. Kane Womack's in his 30s. John Summerall, I think, is 41, early 40s. Jamie Chadwell, still early 40s, and he's making $3.5 million at Liberty. where he's going to win and dominate every year in that conference. He's going to win 10 games a year, and his name's going to stay relevant because Liberty's the only school in that conference that's willing to pay money right now. Willie Fritz is 61 years old. He's at the end of his coaching career. If he wants the shot at the, quote, big job, the Power 5 job, this is his chance that he could take it, and it's why not? He's making $2.5 million at Tulane. You could double your salary. They'll throw him $5 million a year. They'll give him 4 years guaranteed. That's $20 million. He retires at 66. If he decides that he's done, he's 65 after 4 years. If they want to move on, so be it. He moves on and he rides off into the sunset with $20 million. And so it's Mississippi State. It used to be in old college football that if you really felt like you could win somewhere, you go in and you say, well, this is how I'm going to recruit. This is how I'm going to get the boosters on board. Now it's about one thing and one thing only, and it's how much NIL money do you have? And quite frankly, Mississippi State doesn't have much to offer. So why would you risk your career on Mississippi State if you're a young up-and-comer?
Yeah, and I'll say one more thing, and then I'll let Witt go. Doesn't it almost just makes sense for them to go get Dan Mullen again? Like, at this point, wouldn't they go just get Dan Mullen again?
I think Kirby said, Witt, about Dan Mullen.
He loves to recruit. But, I mean, that was one thing I was going to say was
that, yeah, he does.
I mean, in a time like now where it's NIL is recruiting and Mississippi State doesn't really have any NIL, then why not get a guy like Dan Mullen who doesn't really care to recruit and all he does is bring in big-time transfer players. That's what he did at Florida, and he was successful doing it to a degree until 2021. But if he does that at a school like Mississippi State, then that's what they got to do anyway to get good players. Then why not get a guy like Dan Mullen back there? Granted, I'm in a Twitter battle right now with Brandon Walker. Currently, it's ongoing. And the reasoning for that is because I brought up the point that we've been talking about. Is it better to go to a school like Tulane or stay at a school like Tulane where you know you're going to be at the top of that conference year in and year out in a 12-team playoff system where you probably have a better chance to make the playoff than at Mississippi State where you're probably going to be a bottom five, at best, bottom eight team in a 16-team conference like the SEC? And he was not happy that I said that. So we are currently battling. He said his argument is money and potential of winning. So, like, if somebody did better at Mississippi State, it would be better for their career, which is correct.
I've made it, Witt. I'm blocked by Brandon Walker, so I can't see it.
Are you actually?
And by it by I, the Rowdy Southern Saturday podcast is blocked We've by Brandon it. Walker. Here, so anyway, continue it. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Here's one thing. And Brandon Walker wants to talk about money. $2.5 million a year at Tulane. I would like to know, other than maybe Jamie Chadwell, is there a higher paying Group of Five job right now? So, like, is it worth doubling your salary to be the 15th best team in a 16-team conference?
But that's my point. If you're a young guy, no. If you are John Sumrall and you know that whenever Mark Stoops decides that he wants to hang it up, which quite frankly, the way that Kentucky's played the past few weeks, if the rumblings are true about what's going on in Iowa and Kirk Ferentz is going to leave after this year, Stoops is a natural fit for that job. And he's tapped out what he's going to do at Kentucky. Quite frankly, at this point, they're just going to start getting frustrated with him. John Sumrall, you put that on the table. Would you rather go to Kentucky or Mississippi State?
Kentucky. He's a Kentucky guy.
There you go. Boom. All right. So if you're John Sumrall, do you risk not being able to go to Kentucky because you wanted to just crack in the SEC and you wanted to multiply your salary by five? No. You can continue winning at Troy, and there's other jobs that are going to come open. For example, last year Louisville came open, and Jeff Brohm got that job. Louisville or Mississippi State?
Louisville.
Yeah. I mean, I could play this game all day. Mississippi State has an inflated view of what Mississippi State is. Arkansas and Mississippi State come open. What's the better job?
Arkansas.
It's not that hard. Look at yourself in the mirror and realize what you are. And I understand that the SEC as a whole you know, looks at that and they say, all right, yeah, you know, we want to bring everybody with us. And Mississippi State views themselves like the brags that they have on Twitter is, well, look at how many bowl games we go to consecutively. Look at all these things that we can do consecutively. Like, we went to so many bowl games. They're proud of mediocrity. They're proud of 6-6. They're proud of 5-7. But that's what you are. And in this age, if that's what you want to be, you're not getting great players. You're not. And sure, Mississippi State has on paper a chance to go 6-6 this year. But I'm not sold on the fact that they're going to beat Southern Miss this weekend.
That's what I was going to say.
I mean,
the boys from Hattiesburg might make a statement.
And they're not good.
No, they're not.
So, but Mississippi State's on quit watch. If they get Will Rogers back, they'll for sure win that game. If they get the running back, his name escapes me, but he's pretty decent, Marks.
It escapes me as well.
If he comes back, they'll be all right. But
update. Brandon Walker, still battling Brandon Walker right now. He came back and said, no coach in America would ever think that Tulane is a better job than Mississippi State. Even in a 12-team playoff. Remember, Brandon Walker is a Mississippi State fan.
Let's remember. Oh, I know.
I asked him taking Mississippi
State. He's an idiot, though.
I asked him taking Mississippi State out of it. If you're Willie Fritz, would you rather be at Tulane or Arkansas? So let's see what he says. I'm assuming he's going to say Arkansas. But
I actually would rather be at Arkansas than Tulane.
I would rather be at Arkansas than Tulane.
Arkansas is a better job.
Arkansas has, like, here the thing with Arkansas is very much like Ole Miss, to where if you get the right guy in there and they can get the NIL money, it'll start flowing in. And, like, look at their basketball program. Like,
their baseball program.
Eric Musselman. I mean, you can make the argument for baseball in Mississippi State, too. But the difference is Arkansas, there's just more money there. Like, this is no dig at Mississippi State, but you don't have the alumni base that is wealthy.
Mm-mm.
Like, there's a few. There's a few Mississippi State grads that have done very well for themselves. But when you go to Oxford, Mississippi, it's just different. There's an arrogance about Oxford and Ole Miss fans that they have about, you know, they're the wealthier school of the two. It's just a fact. And now that paying players is legal, Ole Miss is really good at it compared to Mississippi State. Arkansas can be. They just haven't developed that NIL package yet.
No.
Arkansas to me is a better job than Mississippi State. Here,
well,
but to me it all goes back to what I was saying about Summerall. If you're 38, 39, and you've got your career ahead of you, why would you commit career suicide by going and taking a head coaching job at Mississippi State right now?
So overall on this, can we get, let's give and then let's talk about Arkansas and Texas A&M after this. Let's just give a quick consensus. Who's it going to be? I can very much see Dan Mullen going back. But quit Twittering and answer my question.
No, I think, I
see.
Go ahead, Witt.
Here's my thing. Here's my thing about Dan Mullen. I haven't looked this up yet. Chad, you probably know since you're a Florida fan. How much was his buyout at Florida?
I think in the range of 20. I got to look. I don't know off the top. So I can't remember.
He's 2 years into a $20 million buyout, and he's got a pretty sweet
sitting
gig.
Sitting at a desk in Bristol, Connecticut.
And at ESPN. So would he want to go back to Mississippi State? I don't know. That would be my thing with Dan Mullen. Would I think he'd be a good fit? Absolutely. I think he's the best fit for Mississippi State. Him and I think Willie Fritz, if he would leave Tulane to go to Mississippi State, he would probably be as good a fit, if not better, than Dan Mullen. But I also think Willie Fritz is a good recruiter. I think he's a good recruiter. And I don't think that's what you want at Mississippi State, because I don't think they're going to recruit like that. And I don't think they need to. I mean, they might recruit well. They'll get a couple good 3-stars, same way Mullen did, and he'll turn them into really good players that'll play in the NFL. But if you're Mississippi State, you want a guy that's going to attract the big-time transfers, the guys that are going to leave the Georgias, the Alabamas, the Ohio States, and want to come play for a team that's still playing in front of big-time TV but don't have all the five-star quarterbacks so they can actually get playing time and come shine. And that's what I think Mississippi State is, and that's what they've been. That's what they were with the Pirate, and that's what Dan Mullen had at Florida too. So
it was $12 million, by the way. Sorry, I was
$12 million. Oh, he needs it. He's in. He's got to be. That money's gone.
Compared to Jimbo, I mean, Dan Mullen is poor.
That money's gone. He's been at the strip clubs in Atlanta. That money's been long gone. I know what he's doing.
Matt, give me your prediction real quick, and then let's talk about either Arkansas or A&M.
Or
Mississippi State's new head coach.
I think Willie Fritz. I really do. If Willie Fritz is the only one that I can wrap my head around and say, overall, makes sense, great hire. And I would give them an A+ on that hire.
Matt,
he's a good fit.
Question for your answer. Willie Fritz, if you're Willie Fritz, put yourself in his shoes, his much older shoes, but not much older than that. Arkansas or Mississippi State? Because he's probably going to get offered both, assuming Sam Pittman actually gets fired.
Well, it's not even a question. Arkansas.
Then why would he not go to Arkansas?
To me, Arkansas is going to have more candidates than Mississippi State is.
Yeah.
I think Arkansas has a run at someone like John Sumrall.
Even Jeff Traylor.
Arkansas has a run for a guy like Jeff Traylor. Arkansas has a run for, you know, Jamie Chadwell, in my opinion. Jamie Chadwell, now here's where good transition into A&M. All right. Now this is just me being a little quirky here. Dabo to Texas A&M.
No way. No way. No.
You don't think so?
No, I don't. Where are you pulling that from?
Now, I'm just saying you had the interaction with Tyler. Dabo and Clemson, the marriage seems to have some cracks in it. The Texas A&M is going to want to splash like Brian Kelly. You throw a big name like Dabo at Texas A&M, and Dabo has that culty feel. Like, he's going to buy into everything that they want. He'll be the leader at the Midnight Yell. He'll pet Reveille and be on the front page of the paper. He will throw on the maroon and white. He will get the fans energized about going there. And you feel like his time at Clemson is, like, not over, but there's cracks. There's the fan base is not the fan base wouldn't hate it, right? If he moved on. And what job would be willing to throw $100 million at Dabo more so than Texas A&M?
Here's my one thing with that, really fast. Does that not literally look like an exact repeat of what they just did?
But it's Texas A&M. Why would you be I agree with you.
That's a good point.
Would it surprise anyone?
Would it surprise anyone?
No, it would not surprise me, Matt. You bring that up, that kind of opened my eyes a little bit. I don't think it's going to happen, but it would not shock me.
I don't either.
It could.
Here's the thing about Dabo.
Hearing you explain it,
here's the thing about Dabo. Nick Saban, when I say this, Matt, I'm not saying Nick Saban has fallen off as the best coach in college football, because he still is. Nick Saban starts to lose some games, starts to not dominate college football. The same time
Dabo Sweeney is not going to Alabama.
Dabo starts to die out at Clemson.
No.
I'm just saying.
Dabo is not going to be the head coach at Alabama.
I don't think it's a coincidence. I think Dabo is purposefully tearing apart Clemson. This is my conspiracy.
Well, that's not true.
Purposefully tearing apart Clemson from the inside to make up for beating Alabama in two national championships. Because Alabama fans hate Dabo now. Even though he's their lone son and the chosen rightful heir to the throne that is Alabama's head coaching job.
No.
When he tears apart Clemson and comes to Alabama and wins one national championship in 10 years.
That would be the most unpopular hire probably ever. I mean, that would be so...
It would be Greg Schiano, Tennessee-esque.
I mean, it would be bad. I mean, Alabama fans... as a whole already don't like Dabo, and they hate the I remember whenever Dabo was winning consistently, like national championships, like in that run, and everyone, like, there would be one Alabama fan that's like, there's the heir to the Saban throne, and then the rest of the fan base would be like, we don't want that fraud. We don't smoke Marlboros like us. Come on, man. We don't want a guy like that.
You think the people of Tuscaloosa can afford a Marlboro?
You're right. They're on them Pall Malls, baby.
Hey, they're on Newports,
I'm
man.
Sure
what
the, I'm sure
about?
The Gumps hated Nick Saban, too, when he came over.
They did. You want to be honest? Yes. I remember it very vividly. There was a large section of the Alabama fan base that was pissed that we did not get Rich Rodriguez. Rich Rodriguez was the rumored hire. It was like a done deal. And then when it comes out that it's actually Nick Saban, everyone's like, what the hell, man? We didn't get Rich Rod. God dang. We were done. Put a fork on us. We're dead. The Saban fella can't even coach in the NFL. My God, I mean, I know he won the games at LSU, but Jesus, man, you going to give us Nick Saban? What?
Oh, my God.
And then, you know, he goes on and does what he does, and now everybody's like, man, I tell you, if everybody talk about this damn Kirby Smart like he's some Nick Saban, but he learned from Saban. They better not forget that part.
Why do I feel like I'm just, like, in the middle of Mobile, Alabama right now?
No, that was more Montgomery. Mobile's got more of a Cajun twist to it. But no, I mean,
I could see it now that you've explained it. I could see it.
It like Dabo fits the Texas A&M mold of what they want. Now I think Mike Elko is probably their dude.
Yeah, that's gotta be. That's where I gotta be. To go with it. I mean,
Keep going. Here's the difference between Mississippi State and A&M. I think Mississippi State got emotional about being 4-6 and Ole Miss winning and fired Zach Arnett. I think A&M has their guy. Like, I think A&M was like, and so Mississippi State, it's like, all right, so where do we start? Give me your best names. And the AD's sitting there going, all right, Willie Fritz. All right, does anyone have his cell phone number? Can I call this guy? All right, A&M was like, hey, hey, Dabo, are you interested in potentially becoming the next true 12th man? No? Okay. Hey, Mike Elko, are you interested in becoming the true next 12th man? Yes, you're in? All right, cool. We're firing Jimbo tomorrow. Don't say anything to your wife yet. Don't tell anybody. Wait for the newspaper to come out tomorrow, and then hold on and keep winning at Duke. Click. All right, and that's how that went down. Like, but it just is a completely different feel to the two jobs.
I honestly fully believe that you're right about that. I think they called Mike Elko and said, look, I think, for number one, I think they've been talking about it for weeks. Number two, I think they finally figured it out, and that's why he got fired, because I think that's why, I mean, after a 51-10 win, you don't fire a guy. You wait to the end of the season, especially like how they're, I mean, not that they're a great team, but they're 6-4. They got a chance to go 8-4. That's not terrible. Like, it's not saying it's one of Jimbo's worst years. They're not a bad team this year either. They're just underperforming. But
I feel like people took it as a jab from Lane Kiffin, but when Lane Kiffin said that they're kind of coming into form and finding themselves, he's not wrong. Like, A&M played very gritty in that Ole Miss game, and I mean, it came down to a blocked field goal at the end of the game. Otherwise, you're going to overtime, and who knows what happens. I mean, A&M wins that game, and you're talking about 9-3 season potentially for A&M. It's a great job. Dabo, just to me, it feels like that would be the Brian Kelly type, like, out of left field hire that nobody sees coming, and then here comes Dabo, and he would embrace it wholeheartedly, and it might fail miserably. But when has A&M ever been more than just a mediocre job to begin with?
Well,
I mean, I know the money and the resources are there, and they're a sleeping giant. But yeah. I mean, look at history. When does history say you should be winning multiple ten win season in the past two decades?
Yeah, and the reality of that is it didn't become this big sleeping giant job until they moved to the SEC. Because this never happened when they were in the Big 12 pre-2012. So it's got to be Mike Elko. Like, now that Matt's explained it, I can see them going in the direction of Dabo Swinney and having this gigantic boom splash hire. That's what you just did. You just did that. You took, like, literally, I think Clemson's in a better place now than Florida State was when Jimbo Fisher left. Because you think what you want about Willie Taggart, I don't think all that was left to him is his fault. I think a vast majority of what happened at Florida State is on Jimbo Fisher. So I don't know if Texas A&M, regardless of all the money and all the hype behind that job, I wouldn't repeat the same mistake. I wouldn't. I would go get a guy who's gone to Duke, a lifeless football program. Lifeless. We've seen Duke be good twice in our lifetime because we were not alive for Steve Spurrier at Duke. And even if we were, we don't remember it. We were adolescents. So this guy is on almost damn near the same level that David Cutcliffe had Duke at in that short span that he was there. And that's saying something. Man, if you're being good at Duke is the same as being good at Vanderbilt. It's exactly the same. It is exactly the same. Academic standards are through the roof. You cannot recruit like you want to. Mike Elko has done a phenomenal job, and he came from Texas A&M. Now, I can see there being the hang-up with everybody going, well, he was on Jimbo's staff. I can see that if people want to make that argument, but at the same time, you have to look at what he's done at Duke and realize that this man has lost 8 games at Duke through a total of 23. 15-8 at Duke is incredible. Like, it's literally incredible. It is James Franklin at Vanderbilt type stuff. And so I think it's got to be Mike Elko. This is Hugh Freeze and Auburn all over again, in my opinion, if you're Texas A&M. I mean, I've seen reports that they want Lanning. I saw a report yesterday that A&M boosters want to back Dan Campbell from the Lions. You're not taking him. And if I'm an NFL coach, why would I ever take a college job?
Unless you're D'Amico Ryans and the Alabama job comes open, just saying.
I mean, that's an Alabama thing. I'm not worried about that. But, like, the NFL, you don't work 365 days a year. In college football, you work 366 days a year. It never stops. Why would Dan Campbell look at where he's at right now in the NFL where the Lions are starting to roll? He's beloved in Detroit. Have a very good chance, I think, to be the number one or two seed in the NFC. And then you want to go to Texas A&M and take that pressure? No. No chance. Give it to a guy who's familiar with the program, who is showing you right now that he can consistently win football games. Like, the ACC is not this massive, fantastic conference. Duke football is known for being at the bottom, consistently at the bottom. And this man has already won 15 out of his 23 games at Duke. I don't know what else to say. Because if you don't hire Mike Elko, I think you're incorrect. Just a fact. And that's my factual opinion. Like, Mike Elko has to be your guy. You can't repeat the same mistake. You can't try to repeat what you just did, and what LSU just did, and what USC just did, and go, man, we got to make a big name for ourselves. Let's go get Dabo Swinney. Let's go see if we can give Kirby Smart $97 million to come away from UGA, or let's try to pull Saban from Alabama. No, can't do that. Make a smart hire. Don't make a hire that you're going to go, you know, we got to win now. Because as much talent as you have, you can win now, but you have to be realistic.
Chad, are you...
Especially with Texas coming in.
Chad, are you saying that Kirby Smart and Nick Saban would not be good hires for Texas A&M?
I was thinking the same thing. Kirby, that's it. Kirby and Nick, wow, you wouldn't... I would want them if I was A&M.
All right, I'm just using Elko, that as an example, though.
Kirby,
they can't.
Nick.
Yeah.
Stop. It's a tier See, one. There no, you
it's,
got,
it's Mike
there
Elko. Dabo Swinney, Kirby and Nick.
There you guys
with
go.
With Dan Lanning up here just wait, below. But just
Mike Elko, there you guys Ra-Ra go again. Thomas, yes. Dabo Swinney.
But it's Mike Elko and nobody else. I agree. Make the right hire, A&M.
I agree with Chad. It should be Mike Elko. But let's get into some game recap from this weekend because Whit Barfield was in Athens, Georgia this weekend. And everyone hypes up. It's a top 10 matchup. Georgia, Ole Miss. I kind of saw it coming, and I kind of gave a little bit of insight as to why I thought Ole Miss was going to lose last week. what a butt whooping that Georgia put on them. Whit, what did you see from the Dogs from the 600 section of Sanford Stadium?
Not much, Matt. I was sitting in the clouds. Yeah, I actually had a rain cloud run right through me, completely soaked me. Thank God I was wearing a rain jacket. It was a rainy, dreary day in Athens, Georgia. Tailgating was very, very dim. And honestly, because of that, part of me was like, a little worried the crowd's not going to be there. A little worried it's not going to be as loud as it normally is in Sanford Stadium for a top 10 matchup. But I was completely wrong. It was completely packed. It was by far the loudest I've ever heard Sanford Stadium. And I really didn't realize this until after the game. That's the biggest game I've ever been to at Sanford Stadium. Before that, it was the Kentucky-Georgia game in 2021, which was another beatdown for College Game Day. And that was Kentucky. So Ole Miss, to me, is a better program. And I think they are a better team this year than Kentucky was that year. So huge, huge matchup. The way it started was exactly how I thought the game would go from start to finish. Jackson Dart ran all over the place. Receivers got open. Lane Kiffin was aggressive. Fourth down, going for it on fourth down all the time. Georgia's defense struggled to start the game. Started getting pressure on Jackson Dart. He started to struggle. The offense rolled the entire game. Kendall Milton finally he broke 100 yards for the first time, finally broke out. I think Georgia's rolling, boys. I think we're back to being number one.
I disagree with you, man. Georgia's rolling. They came right into form. But look, this is not me trying to belittle Georgia's win because it was massive. But I kind of alluded to it earlier. Like, I said it last week, too. Is Ole Miss really that good? Like, are they really that good? Because if you look at what they've done, like, you look at their record going into that game, and you say, all right, well, like, they're 8-1. Their one loss is to Alabama, and you go, all right, well, in Tuscaloosa. Sure. And it was by 14. The offense really just couldn't get going. Alabama's got a good defense. It is what it is. It was early in the year on the road. No big deal. But if you look throughout their schedule, Arkansas is not a good team. Ole Miss was down by 3 to Arkansas in the fourth quarter. Arkansas was down to Tulane by 7 in the fourth quarter. Arkansas got in a rock fight with Texas A&M. Ole Miss got in a rock fight with Tulane, and Ole Miss got in a rock fight with Texas A&M.
Hey, Arkansas is a good team.
Ole Miss beat LSU, and everyone's like, oh, that's the game that's Kiffin's big shining win. LSU was in a rock fight with Arkansas. Like LSU's good, but they're not like upper echelon elite.
They can't stop Delta State.
No, they could not. So I kept asking that question repeatedly, and the resounding answer I got is, well, good teams find ways to win, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. And I don't want to dismiss what Ole Miss has done this year, because if preseason you walked up to 100 Ole Miss fans and you said, all right, let's play, let's make a deal. All right, I'm going to tell you what's behind door number one, and then you're going to have the option either take what's in door number one or open door number two. And in door number one is 8-2 with ULM at home. You're favored by 36.5. You're going to win that game. You're guaranteed a 9-win season.
Don't sleep on the Bowden brothers.
You're going to Mississippi State, doesn't have a head coach, doesn't have a starting quarterback, doesn't have a running back, and put up 100 yards of offense on Texas A&M, barely. Their one touchdown was a kickoff return. Very first play of the game, kickoff return for a touchdown. That's it. You're probably going 10-2, and you're going to be in a position to have a New Year's Six bowl. Or you could take behind what's in door number two, which is who the hell knows. 99 out of 100 Ole Miss fans are taking what's behind door number one and saying, absolutely, I will take 10-2 all day long. So it's not a bad season from Ole Miss. You see the separation between Alabama, Georgia, and everybody else, because Ole Miss right now is the third best team in the SEC. Maybe Mizzou. Maybe Mizzou this year.
I think they're better than Mizzou.
I think they're better than
defensively,
Mizzou.
Defensively, they're not.
I don't think defensively, no, they're not better than Mizzou, but I would love to see that game.
That'd be a fun one.
But I mean, to answer your question, I think I can compare this to another game that we saw this weekend. This is outside of the SEC. I think Ole Miss right now is an exact reflection of Penn State in the South. Like, I think that's a apples to apples comparison. I think
they're a lot better.
Like
than
we
Penn
saw,
State, but
I think offensively they're way better than Penn State. Defensively, I think Penn State's probably better. Honestly,
very much so.
Like, yeah. If that's a New Year's Six game, can we have that, please? Like, Ole Miss, Penn State?
I honestly think Ole Miss would destroy Penn State. Penn State's offense.
I don't think Penn State can keep up.
Penn State is Iowa.
I don't think Penn State
can. With more talent.
They're not Iowa-esque. I mean, they can score more than six. At least they can score 10. But Matt's got a point. Look, Ole Miss, I think Ole Miss is up there. I don't think Ole Miss is far off. I really don't. It's just going to take a couple recruiting classes and some portal transfers to get Ole Miss there. Kiffin's doing the right thing. Right? Kiffin's doing the right thing. And I would absolutely agree with you the fact that if you're Ole Miss fans, when you look behind door number one to think about the way that last season ended with the whole, is Lane going to Auburn? Is he going to stay? This is a great recovery. It absolutely tells you that Lane Kiffin has a culture in place. It tells you that Lane Kiffin has the love from his players. He is the CEO at Ole Miss. He is. And he's come from the mold of Saban. I think he's been reformed by Saban, and he's got the program going in the right direction. Speak to Georgia. They're really good. Carson Beck has found his step. As much as I hate Mr. Rehab himself, Stetson Bennett, it's probably a really good thing for Carson Beck to sit behind Stetson Bennett for 2 years because of the poise I think that it's helped him produce this year and the ability to sit back and learn from Stetson Bennett. That's the nicest thing I'll ever say about Stetson Bennett, and I didn't even really directly compliment him. But, yeah, Georgia looks good, dude. Like, they are getting to that point to where they're looking really elite, and so is Alabama. And now that both those divisions are shored up, I'm really excited for the SEC championship game because I think it presents a very intriguing matchup.
I'm not excited because there's no way we could ever beat Georgia.
I just don't see it. I mean,
Georgia's a rolling ball of butcher knives right now. There's just no way.
And there's no way. Not according to a sales rep in South Georgia for a certain rental company whose last name may start with a B. But, yeah, Georgia looks good, dude. I don't know what else to say. I mean, you can't. What else are you supposed to say about Georgia? I mean, you can compliment them all day.
Yeah, look.
But what does it matter? The compliments are not. Like, Kirby somehow got his whole team convinced that everybody thinks you're going 3-9. We got to go prove them wrong. They didn't even think that we would beat the University of South Dakota Tech for the Blind. They think we would lose to them.
Look, we all know Kirby Smart could lead a dictatorship. He'd be a phenomenal dictator. I don't know if you guys watched him on College Game Day. They asked him about, like, Pat McAfee, of course, comes right out and goes, how would it feel to win a third national championship in a row? And Kirby's like, I'm just worried about fucking Ole Miss. And then he rolls on after the game. They're interviewing him, asking how he feels about beating Ole Miss, how he feels about playing Alabama again. He said, we play Tennessee next week. Ask me about them. That's it. That dude, he is so focused all the time. All the time. Even when he plays golf, apparently.
From?
But apparently he's always on his phone playing
golf.
Oh,
yeah, when he plays
golf.
That's right. That's right.
I hope Kirby Smart hits a ball into the sand trap and goes to take a swing, and there's a nearby thunderstorm, and it strikes his sand wedge and kills him.
See, I was thinking more of the Looney Tunes route, like that he was going to reach in for his ball, and he gets sucked into Looney Tune land, and he's got to coach a football game against the Monstars. But, yeah, you know, whatever.
Did you just call him the LeBron James and Michael Jordan of college football coaches?
LeBron James, yeah, because he's right behind the GOAT.
Space Dogs.
Yeah,
November 2026. Space Dogs.
But the one thing that stood out to me in that game the most is just the speed on defense. Like, Ole Miss is just so slow defensively, and they're small. I think the biggest thing, like, everyone was talking about Brock Bowers coming back for the game. To me, Mims coming back for Georgia was the biggest win in that game because he's a top 15 NFL offensive line talent. Like, pick. Like if the draft were today, he's going in the top. Like and he's is he eligible this year? Is he a senior this year? Junior this year?
Mims.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a junior.
Yeah, so he's a top 15 pick this year in my mind. He's a first round offensive lineman. Dude's a beast, and he was the bigger impact on that game than Brock Bowers. And Brock Bowers was a massive impact. You saw it on one of the plays where McConkey was running a post route. And one of the safeties was keyed on watching Bowers and was help over the top, and it freed out a wide open window for Beck to fit it in. I said it last week. I said this is going to be Carson Beck when we look back, his shining moment, his arrival, so to speak. Like he had his breakout against Florida. He had his management against Mizzou. He had his shining moment. This is where we are. Carson Beck's good, man. And what makes him good is Georgia fans put some respect on Mike Bobo's name. He's calling plays that is getting the ball out of Carson Beck's hands fast to not allow any pressure to get on him. It's handoff, pounding the ball up the middle. Dejon Edwards, I mean, dude had a hell of a game. He's had a great career at Georgia, a very underrated career at Georgia over his time there. Mike Bobo deserves a ton of respect. And, you know, look, you can't always be perfect. I know when Georgia doesn't score, they blame Bobo. Sometimes it's the players. It's not the play calling. It's the execution.
And can we talk about Jaden Daniels now?
Heisman Trophy winning should be Jaden Daniels.
Yeah. Let me go back and try to erase what I've said from the archives. Michael Penix, I still think you're a fantastic player. Jaden Daniels alone accounted for 600 yards of offense, as I shed a tear. Yeah, Jaden Daniels is going to win the Heisman, guys. And if he doesn't, I wouldn't be shocked, but my stance has changed. I watched our defense get shredded by absolute guy who's just doing everything, dude. I mean, he's unbelievable. Like, Herm Edwards, how do you sit in your bed at night and think how did you ruin this kid? Like, how did you not allow this kid to do this when he was at Arizona State? I don't get that. But I'll say one thing, like, to get, just because I'm a Florida fan and I'll speak to this. We suck. But I'll tell you one thing that I think is different about Billy Napier than Dan Mullen. Our kids are fighting. Our kids are fighting. They went into that game. They competed. They played well.
They're just not that good.
They're young. They're very young. I was telling Witt this earlier today. At the end of the season, if it ever comes out, I want to see how many, like, what percentage of snaps were played by freshmen on our team. Because it's got to be really high. It's like almost like half the defense is true freshmen. But I thought we fought hard. I mean, culture looks good this year. I mean, I would like to make a bowl game. If we don't, it is what it is. This year's over for us. But that's all I'm going to say about us. Yeah, Jaden Daniels is really good, guys. Like, the man had accounted for 600 yards of offense by himself. And that means that the rest of the offense only accounted for 102 yards. Like, Jaden Daniels by himself. That alone is a Heisman moment. Like, just the whole game itself is a Heisman moment. This dude broke off 250-plus yard runs for touchdowns. And one of them was 80-plus. Like, it's... Yeah, what do you do to stop him, dude? No one has stopped him.
If the draft was today, would you take Jaden Williams or Jaden Daniels or Caleb Williams?
I would take Jaden Daniels.
I would take Caleb Williams still.
I would take Jaden Daniels.
It's interesting because I feel like that's starting to become a part of the conversation, and it's not a knock on Caleb Williams. I think more than anything, it's singing the praises of Jaden Daniels because his development this year, he was really good last year. If you take Jaden Daniels off of LSU, they're probably 500 right now. Like, with the way that, as bad as that defense is, they're horrible. As bad as that defense is, Jaden Daniels is the difference maker. LSU would not have beaten, they probably would have beaten Florida. It would depend what Florida team shows up.
I keep you asking me that. I don't know.
Maybe. You're right, though.
Is it the Florida team that played Tennessee or the Florida team that played Arkansas? Which one is it?
If it was Garrett Nussmeier who started in that game, not Jaden Daniels, I do think Florida would have won. And, I mean, look, LSU's offense is really, really good. I would argue that they're the best offense in the country. I think it's probably them or USC, to be honest. And they both have the worst defense.
I think it's them.
Probably them.
I think it's them.
But if you look at it, who is good on LSU's offense besides Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas and Jaden Daniels? I can't name another player off the top of my head. I mean, they have decent running backs. They have a former five-star at running back in Noah Cain, who barely ever gets the ball. But they don't run the ball at all. It's Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels runs for, I think he's averaging like over 20 or 30 yards a game rushing. It might even be more than that. He had over 200 yards rushing against Florida. He is their entire offense. And I'll give him a lot of credit for that. Granted, I do think in terms of talking about him and Caleb Williams, if you swap the two, I don't think they would be better, but I don't think they would be worse. And I think you could say the same thing about Jaden Daniels going to USC. So I do think I still like Caleb Williams.
I think there's one difference in the two of them. Caleb Williams is not good under pressure. Jaden Daniels is. Like, Caleb Williams in big games doesn't. Like, Jaden Daniels has not had a Caleb Williams at Notre Dame game. Like what happened this past year.
That was a bad game.
Like, Jaden Daniels has not. Yeah, Jaden Daniels hasn't had one of those games. I mean, Caleb Williams is a phenomenal athlete. Don't get me wrong. I think he'll be a good NFL quarterback. Like, he's great. But to me, he's the third quarterback taken off the board now. I mean, I would put Drake May and Jaden Daniels absolutely ahead of Caleb Williams at this point. I mean, and it's not a knock on Caleb Williams. It's really not. Like, he's a good quarterback. He panics. Caleb Williams panics sometimes. And he'll just throw the ball up into coverage and make mistakes. Jaden Daniels, dude's played a damn near perfect season. Like, his numbers are almost Burrow-esque, if not, like, very similar to what Joe Burrow did in his time at LSU. But, yeah.
Last but not least, Mizzou beat the brakes out of Tennessee. Tennessee's done. Put a fork in them. Georgia's going to put the last log on the fire this weekend and completely roast them. I doubt, what's his name, the receiver, number one. Cannot think of it. For Tennessee, but they're outside of Squirrel White, they had one receiver. Squirrel White's in the slot. They didn't have that Jalen Knox type guy this year. That's been their biggest problem. He catches the first touchdown to tie the game against Mizzou and, like, tore his quad. Like, it was bad. It was not good. He was done, and after that, Tennessee's offense went malignant. And, look, Georgia's going to absolutely bury them alive in Neyland Stadium this weekend.
Wait.
So, nonetheless, Tennessee, Mizzou, put some respect on the job that Eli Drinkwitz has done at Mizzou this year. I think I know all three of us, at least, had Mizzou in the bottom three of the SEC as a whole. Here they are. In the catbird seat, so to speak, for a New Year's Six Bowl out of the SEC, because quite frankly, they played Georgia a lot more competitively than Ole Miss did. So, if it comes down to ranking those two, I imagine Mizzou's going to get the nod, and I've got to give a shout out to Eli for that.
Yeah, big shout out to Eli Drinkwitz and Brady Cook. Wrapping up the rest of the conference. Not really a need to talk about it. Alabama's rounding into form just like Georgia is. Alabama's really scary right now. Went to Lexington and beat the brakes off Kentucky at an 11 a.m. kickoff, and that's a hard thing to do sometimes.
Really sucks that we're not that good this year.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? And you got to give a shout-out to South Carolina, too, man. I know it's Vandy, but Shane Beamer kind of needed that.
It's Vandy. Don't put stock in it. It's Vandy.
I'm just saying Shane Beamer needed that. I'm not putting stock in it, but Shane Beamer needed it. Also,
it's Vandy.
It is Vandy. I'm just saying Shane Beamer needed
that. It's Vandy. Real quick, going back to Missouri, we got to talk about Cody Schrader. That dude went for 205 yards rushing and 116 yards receiving against Tennessee. He put the team on his back.
Schrader.
And blew up.
Schrader's a beast, man.
He's an absolute Schrader superstar.
Schrader's a beast.
Absolute superstar. Emerged this year. Honestly, a guy that probably should get a little more Heisman look if we're talking about running backs, but it's a quarterback award. We all know that.
It is. It is a quarterback award. I don't know why we give out Davey O'Brien award. Stupid. Davey O'Brien, right?
Davey O'Brien's QB.
Maxwell. Yeah, that's what I thought. I don't know why we give out the. I don't know why we give out those awards. And then also one last final wrap. And we didn't really touch on this much. We kind of briefly mentioned it. Auburn beat the shit out of Arkansas.
Woo, boy.
And now I saw a tweet today. It has not been confirmed, but I saw a tweet today that Sam Pittman was done. There may be either he was done today, or if it wasn't formally announced, that he's probably going to be done after they play Missouri in 2 weeks. We're watching Polar Express at halftime. Somebody explain that one.
Somebody had said that was fake, but the more that I've seen it,
Sam Pittman addressed it in his media.
Yeah, I saw that today, but somebody there was like a media guy who said that wasn't true. Not a good look. I will say this. The idea of going into Black Magic Jordan Air Stadium in 2 weeks while they're starting to peak makes my skin crawl.
7-4 Auburn at that point, more than likely.
7-4 Auburn.
They get
at that
New
point.
Mexico State this week.
And that's
hey. I'm gonna talk about them in a minute. Don't worry, I'm gonna talk about them in a minute. But well, since I'm gonna talk about them in a minute, let's go ahead and move into our pour one out, cut them off. Whit, start us off.
So I have no cut them off this week. I'm gonna go ahead and say that. Pouring one out for Brock Bowers. And I'll tell you why. Not only did he play in the game this weekend against Ole Miss, coming off of the ankle injury, he was contacted. I read an article about this yesterday. He was contacted by multiple agents after he got hurt. He told Kirby Smart this, and Kirby said it in a press conference. They told him not to play the rest of the season and to sit out because it would hurt his draft stock. And the only reason he played in the game this weekend is because he told Kirby, as soon as that happened, he said, I want to take the most aggressive approach possible so I can get back and play before the SEC championship, before the end of the regular season, because I want to make all these agents eat their words. And that right there is dog status. That's DGD right there. Dude shows up, has all these guys telling him to sit out, telling him to wait and just take the money, and he shows up and plays in the biggest game of the season for Georgia. So, and honestly, he was a big part of the game plan, too. I mean, even with him in there, he didn't do a ton. He had the touchdown, but he caught a lot of eyes on him. And that is a big thing for Georgia. It's going to be a big thing for Georgia going forward. So pour one out for Brock Bowers and pour one out for Sanford Stadium once again. Athens, Georgia, had a good weekend there. Hit the bars Friday hard. Got a total of 4 hours of sleep the whole weekend. Did some tailgating. Even in the rain, Georgia fans all showed up. The lights were awesome. First night game I've been to probably in 5 or 6 years because most of Georgia's games have been at 3:30 or at noon for some reason. So pour one out for Athens. Pour one out for Brock Bowers. All around Georgia bias right here. Matt, who are you pouring one out for?
This week, I'm going to be pouring one out for... Honestly, I got to give credit where credit is due. Jalen Milroe, man. I've bashed the kid a lot early this season for not being a good quarterback. And do I think he's a good quarterback? No. So I'm really pouring one out for Tommy Rees and Jalen Milroe. I don't think he's a good quarterback as a whole. Throwing the ball intermediate, like he makes passes and hits wide open receivers and does a good job with that, but he has figured out how to use his legs as his advantage. And my God, if Kool-Aid McKinstry doesn't muff a punt, I think we wind up winning that game like 61-0. Like it was joyless murder ball was back this weekend officially. And got to give all kinds of credit to Jalen Milroe because he has worn a lot of criticism this year. And the hardest job in America has to be QB1 at Alabama, because you're under the microscope every single week. It's about to be it's going to be the same way at Georgia. As they start going through all these phases of change, it's rough being on the top of the mountain. It really is. Everyone always makes fun of me when I say that, but it honestly, when you're as good at football as Alabama was for most of my life, it ruins college football in a lot of ways, because there's so much pressure to keep winning. It makes it matter that much more when you don't win. You just feel like your life is over. So be ready for that, Whit, because there will be a day where Georgia's winning streak does come to an end, and you're going to be like, my God, what is life? It's not fun. So embrace it. I am going to be cutting off, and I know we've talked about it a lot, but I'm really cutting off Mississippi State. Lack of reality. I mean, like, they just, there's just this self image that is just so inflated. It's painful. It's actually painful to witness what they do to themselves when they think that they're going to be getting John Harbaugh or something, or Jim Harbaugh, or they're going to, like, that's who they think they are. They think that Rhett Lashley would leave SMU, who's going to the ACC with hundreds of millions of dollars, to go take a job at Mississippi State. That is stupid. Please, put yourself, take the maroon lens glasses off, set them on the table, go look at yourself in the mirror and say, I'm a stupid idiot 10 times, and then walk back to your desk before you post on the message boards again. Bad.
I really hate Starkville.
Hate him. And you know, it's just not, it's so bad, because I really didn't have that bad of an opinion of Mississippi State. I didn't like their cowbells. I thought that was stupid. I thought it made the jokes just too easy. But my God, their audacity to think that they belong in the top ranks of this conference is astounding.
You digress.
I digress.
So, as Whit was just mentioning, Auburn's opponent is who I'm pouring one out for this week. Guys, New Mexico State University Aggies. You know where they're going? You know where they're going, guys? I love that I can look in the camera and see Whit on his phone and Matt on his phone next to me, and no one's paying attention.
I'm watching. I'm listening.
We're still battling Brandon Walker here. We're still battling.
I'm yelling at Brandon. I'm yelling at Brandon Walker and trying to make him think smartly, because he's an idiot.
You heard us. Hear our cry, Brandon Walker. Hear our cry.
Victory screech.
Victory screech.
Exactly.
As I was saying.
Back to New Mexico State.
Does anybody know where New Mexico State's going?
Auburn.
To the Conference USA
Championship.
I just got invited to do a road trip to their game today, that Friday. And you know why, Chad?
Dude, we're going to Las Cruces.
Joey Connors, the brother of my good buddy Danny Connors. Joey Connors is the one that took out Joe Burrow in the Fiesta Bowl. Don't forget, 2018 Fiesta Bowl, Joey Connors is the reason Joe Burrow won the Heisman and almost won a Super Bowl. He is the special teams coordinator for New Mexico State. This is his first year there. So Danny wants to road trip up there.
To this day, that is the most physical football game I think I've ever seen.
To this day.
UCF LSU Fiesta Bowl is the most physical pad-popping football game I think I've ever seen. But seriously, guys, Jerry Kill, bro. Former Minnesota coach who had his health issues at New Mexico State in year two. Guys, Doug Martin, the previous head coach at New Mexico State, he won 25 games in 8 years. Jerry Kill is 8-3, coming off a 7-6 bowl win campaign last year. He's won 15 games in less than 2 years. They've been to 4 bowl games in their entire program history. And now, 40% of that has been accounted for by one man. This program
is a 40% winning percentage in history.
Two men. In Joey history. Connors. Joey Connors included.
Okay. Their yes. tag team. Whatever.
Shout out, Joey.
Shout out, Joey. Jerry Kill for hiring Joey Connors.
Shout out to New Mexico State special teams.
Yes. But, like, seriously, guys, 8-3 conference championship bound? New Mexico State? Diego Pavea has 2,300 yards passing at New Mexico State. Like, historically, probably the worst program in the history of the FBS. One of them. And they're horrid. Dude, that good for them, man. Good for you, New Mexico. Like, you get a gold star. Like, go up to the board, get a gold star, and put it in your cubby. Good for you, New Mexico State. It's a feel-good little story out there in Las Cruces, man. Little border town in New Mexico. Good for them. Feel good for them. And you know who I'm cutting off? I really, really freaking hate. God, Arthur Smith, you piece of shit. I am infuriated.
Who do you hate more, the University of Georgia and Kirby Smart or Arthur Smith and the Atlanta Falcons?
Arthur Smith right now. Like, right now, I am so infuriated by what I have seen the past 2 weeks. I am just, oh, my God. Are you kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me? Put that down. Are you kidding me, Arthur Smith? Like, there's 8 minutes left in the game. You're down by 5. Kick it. Kick it! It would have been a 2-point game. No, after you talked about all week, we're going to give the ball to Bijan and give him some more touches, and it's 4th-and-1, and Taylor Heinicke gets hurt. We run Desmond Ridder off the guard's ass. Not even a tush push, and he trips. He trips.
He scored a rushing touchdown.
Congratulations. Woo! I am so sick and infuriated by this franchise. And I'm used to it. And I was telling Witt this last night after the game because I was so pissed off. I called him just to yell. Like,
none of that surprises me.
No, it doesn't.
It happens weekly.
But, like, this division is so bad. It's so bad. No one's good. The Panthers have won one game. The Bucks are 4 wins. The Falcons have 4 wins. And the Saints are 500. And I hate the Saints. I think we're better than the Saints. We have all this offensive talent. We have a solid defense. And week in and week out, we have this freaking dumbass whose dad owns FedEx. It just doesn't know how to call an offense. Makes emotional decisions. If you kick the field goal and we got the 3 and out and then go down and score, we win by 5. But what do I know? What do I know? I mean, Jesus, Lord, in heaven, help us above. And then it comes out, like, right over after I got to Matt's house, that, nope, we're not going to fire Arthur Smith before the season's over. Then we might as well just cancel all the games.
George is getting angry.
George is getting upset. But, like, dude, I'm so sick and tired of Arthur Smith. I'm so sick and tired of this franchise. Get rid of him. Please, give me Kellen Moore. Give me Eric Bieniemy. Get this moron out of Atlanta. Get him out. I have had enough. I can't do it. But
do you digress?
I digress. But anyway, so we're moving into picks as I take my breaths and slow my heart rate down and bring my blood pressure back to a good reading. Congratulations, Matthew Howell, undefeated in last week's pick, 6-0. Back-to-back weeks of somebody going 6-0. So, Witt, your turn, man. You got to keep up. I expanded my lead on you this week. My winning percentage for the year is now over 60%. You're the only one who hasn't gotten 60% predictions correct. Matt right now in the lead at 42-21, 67%. I'm at 38-25, 60%. Witt's 37-26 at 58%. So
with 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, including championship,
and then Army Navy.
I'm going to Boise, boys. I'm going to Boise.
Going to Boise.
Not yet. It's
not over yet.
It's far from over.
But starting off in the SEC, a game that we probably thought would be very much a game of the week type scenario that really no longer kind of is. Georgia going into Neyland, kind of a revenge game for Tennessee at this moment in time. As we record, it's Monday. We have not seen the rankings yet. Tennessee is still number 13 at 7-3. CBS 330, Georgia number 2, 10-0. The line on this, 10.5. Georgia over under is 59.5. Whit, you're a Georgia fan. You'll pick last. Matt, start us off.
I already said it, man. Tennessee's about to get boat raced in this game. Now, the only thing that I could see potentially affecting this game at all is, correct me if I'm wrong, Whit, but Carson Beck hasn't exactly played in a nasty, hostile environment outside of Auburn, correct?
No.
Auburn was it.
Auburn is the only away game he's played in outside of...
It's nasty.
Yeah. Auburn and Vanderbilt. I think that's it.
And Vandy.
Yeah. Auburn,
so,
Vandy, and then the...
So Auburn is... And in Auburn, in the Auburn game, you saw that there was a little bit of shakiness to the offense. There was certainly not the same high level of play. But here's the thing. I don't care if they played this game in a concrete parking lot. I don't care if they played this game on top of Mount Kilimanjaro. I don't care what they did or where this game is played. It doesn't matter. Georgia's going to win this game and by a landslide. I think they're going to win this game by at least two touchdowns. Tennessee's offense is anemic. Joe Milton has underperformed, is a nice word. Like, he has been not as bad as everyone wants to make him out to be, but not anywhere near the hype he was getting preseason. Georgia's going to dominate this game all over the place. Squirrel White is the only hope that they have to get anything going, and Georgia's going to key in on him. There is no Jalen Knox to worry about this year to get behind the defense. It's a beatdown city. Give me the Dogs in Neyland against the Pumpkin Eaters.
Chad said at the beginning of the year that Georgia's only loss of the regular season was coming this week, and I'm a man of my word. I'm just kidding. I'm not standing by that. The hell? I am not standing by that. Look, Neyland's going to be hostile, right? This is Carson Beck's first true road atmosphere. Since Auburn, whatever. Neyland, I think, is more hostile than Jordan-Hare. It's a close conversation.
Yeah, that's a tough one, yeah.
That's a close conversation.
I don't think it's that close, but
there's more people.
It's kind of close. I've been to both, but granted, I saw Auburn play ULM, but...
I saw Auburn play Georgia Southern, so it wasn't super hostile when I went, and I also wasn't sober. So
that'll do it.
Anyway, that's side stories. That's
you alluding to drinking, Chad. I'm just kidding. Make your pick.
No, I was on magic mushrooms. I'm just kidding, Mom. I don't do drugs.
Drugs, much better. Do drugs, kids.
Yeah. Y'all can't, I have ADD too, so y'all can't do this to me. It could distract me like we just distracted Matt.
That's why I don't do hand signals anymore.
Dude, you look like Condor Stallions over here, man. Like,
if we were on YouTube, this would be hilarious.
I don't even know what I was saying anymore. Just my ADD kicked in. I'm picking Georgia. Whit, just pick.
So if y'all recall, I actually picked Tennessee to beat Georgia in this game as well. But I also picked Joe Milton to win the Heisman, and that is for sure not going to happen. Dude has been not even close to as good as anybody predicted this year. I think he started to pick it up a little bit. Even against Missouri, he had a couple of good throws. Didn't play a very good game, though. I'm not worried about it whatsoever. I watched pretty much the entire Missouri-Tennessee game from an RV TV on the outside. Great RV setup, by the way, for a tailgate, and it's my dream setup, so I will be doing it one day as well. But Tennessee looked bad. Missouri kicked the shit out of them. Georgia kicked the shit out of Ole Miss. I think Georgia's going to kick the shit out of Tennessee. I think this game is going to go a lot like it did in 2019 when I was actually in the stadium. I think Tennessee is going to come out. I think they're going to come out hot and angry with nothing to lose. Take a couple shots, go up early, and maybe go up like 14-7 or 14-10, and then Georgia's going to curb stop them. I think it's like a 30-point game. Georgia's a 10-point favorite, 10.5, which is the lowest line Georgia's had this entire season, so... Maybe Vegas knows something. You never know. But I think Georgia wins the game If it's close, it's because of some Nealon magic. But this game should not be close. What I'm looking for in this game is Tennessee's front seven, especially the defensive line against Georgia's offensive line. Because if you look at Georgia's schedule, there's not a team closer to Alabama on defense than Tennessee. And Tennessee's defense is actually pretty solid this year. So we'll see how Carson Beck does. We'll see how Dejan Edwards, Kendall Milton, the offensive line does against Tennessee's defense and help us compare to what we'll see in the SEC championship. But I'm going Georgia, obviously.
Dogs across the board. Moving to the ACC, a game that I don't think a few weeks ago we thought was going to be interesting, but now I feel like it can be kind of interesting with Clemson kind of starting to find its way and a little bit of footing here later on in the year. Number 24, like I said, all these rankings, it's Monday when we're recording of this, so we have not seen the college football playoff rankings released yet.
North Carolina is not going to be ranked.
No, probably not. But number 24, 8-2 North Carolina, at 6-4 Clemson, 3:30 on ESPN. Clemson is a 6.5-point favorite. Over-under in this football game is 58.5. We're going to bounce back to you, Whit. Who do you have?
I'm going to take Clemson. I mean, I know they're favored. To me, it kind of feels like an upset, just considering UNC was 24 going into last week. They won. I know you guys are thinking they're not going to be ranked. I think there's a good chance they stay ranked just because they're a two-loss team. But considering they had to go to double overtime to beat Duke without Riley Leonard, that to me, that throws up some red flags. I don't think UNC is that good. I honestly am starting to be a little bit out on Drake May, too. I don't think he's looked very good on the back half of this season. I think Cade Klubnik's starting to come into his own. Will Shipley's a beast. Clemson's rounding into form. They let Tech go up last week, but they did win the game. Before that, they beat Notre Dame, who I don't think is a bad football team. I think they beat the tar out of UNC. I don't think it's a close game. It'll be high scoring. I think it'll be I don't know what the over-under is, but I bet it's above 50, and I bet it's a 60 to 70-point total. But I'm going to go Clemson, and I think they win by at least 17 points. Matt, who you got?
I'm going Clemson, too. If it takes you get into overtime to the point where it's two-point conversions to beat Duke with their third-string quarterback, you got problems. Look, North Carolina offensively is very, very good. I mean, Duke has been a very sound defensive team all year. And quite frankly, North Carolina had their way a lot of times with whatever they wanted to do. I mean, they went into double overtime, but 47 points on Duke, and it feels very weird saying this, but 47 points on Duke is not an easy task. North Carolina's offense is elite. But North Carolina's defense is equally as bad as their offense is good. And that's where a guy like Cade Klubnik and Will Shipley are going to have their way against this North Carolina defense. Give me Clemson. I think Clemson wins by 10. Chad.
I agree, man. It's just the way North Carolina played last week at home against Duke without Riley Leonard and allowed them to stay in that game and even caused overtime. And also, can I just say this? Like, Chapel Hill, you guys really just storm the field for beating Duke? Come on, guys.
I mean, it's their basketball.
Come on, man. It's Duke football. We give Mike Elko credit all the time, but guys, it's Duke football. Come on.
It's still a massive rivalry.
It is a massive rivalry, and I get it. They were thrilled.
Let's not act like UNC is traditionally a huge football school either. They've been good the past couple years. Mac Brown's got them where they need to be, but
they're not, but they've got a better football history than Duke. They do.
But
come on. You don't rush the field to beat Duke. I'm sorry.
It's their biggest rival.
NC State's their biggest football rival. Duke is their biggest basketball.
No.
And it's a basketball school, Duke, so therefore.
Duke and UNC are their number one rivals for everything. It's like saying Georgia and Florida
I don't
are
know.
Basketball rivals.
I don't know where he's going with that one. But anyway, back to the game.
Clemson has won two in a row, and everything seemed like it was dire. They kind of got back to form after struggling throughout the first 2.5 quarters of that Georgia Tech game. They just played the smack the rest of the way and pulled away. Georgia Tech scored a garbage time touchdown to make it 42-21 and make it a 3-score football game. But Clemson dominated Georgia Tech. Clemson has taken them pretty much all year, but it kind of looked like what we probably expected. If they had been playing like this all year, it might be a different story. I don't know how much I love Drake May. I really do. I'm really high on him as a quarterback. I think he'll probably be number one or number two taken off the board in April. But they're not going to win this game. Look, Clemson, this is a big game for them at home. Because of the fact that they're 6-4 and they have nothing left this year but to end what little bit of hope North Carolina has left for their chances of going to Charlotte and then getting revenge on South Carolina and Columbia. That's all Clemson has left to play for. And then a potential in a 9-win season with their bowl game. And I think they're going to do that this weekend. The reality is North Carolina's defense, you give that up to Riley, to a Duke-less or to a Riley Leonard-less third-string quarterback Duke football team, I don't think you're going on the road to beat Clemson in a hostile environment, and I think it'll probably be a very, very hostile environment. So give me Clemson to beat the Tar Heels at home and end North Carolina's overall chances that, like I said, the overall slim at making it to the ACC championship game. Moving on to a game that we have never picked, but it's a very interesting game we got going on this week in the Big 12. 7:00, FS1. Once again, it's Monday. These rankings are not updated. Number 25, 7-3, Kansas State. At number 16, 7-3, Kansas. 8-point favorite are the Wildcats going on the road in the Sunflower Showdown. 55.5 is the over-under on this game. And per Lance Leipold today, Jason Bean is, quote, very optimistic in Leipold's mind that Jason Bean will play in this football game after leaving on Saturday against Texas Tech. Whit, who do you have?
I got Kansas, man. I think Leipold's got them playing strong this year. I like Jason Bean if he does play. I'm assuming Jalen Daniels. Is he out for the whole season? He's not coming back at all?
I can't find anything on Jalen Daniels. Last I saw was he re-aggravated his back injury against Texas.
He's a stud when he's healthy, man. But it's crazy the last two seasons he hasn't been able to stay healthy. But, man, I like Kansas State. I like Will Howard. They're a good football team, but I don't know, man. Kansas is just rocking and rolling this year. Their defense is playing really strong. Jason Bean, when he's healthy, playing really well. If he doesn't play in this game, I know I'm not allowed to change picks, but I probably would. The fact that Kansas gets him at home, that's going to be a rocking Lawrence, Kansas environment. Little Rock Chalk Jayhawk. But I got Kansas in this one. I think they win in a super, super close game. This is going to be one of the better Kansas-Kansas State rivalry games. So looking forward to it. Matt, who you got?
Give me the people of Manhattan and Kansas State, man. They've just been finding ways to stay competitive and win games this year. And I really enjoyed watching that Texas game where they're getting blown out. And all of a sudden you look up and they're tied. And they had a chance to win it there in the end. And I absolutely wholeheartedly agree with what they did in overtime. Going for it on fourth down. Go for the win. You're on the road. Why not? Look. Give me Kansas State. This is going to be a knockout dragout game, a game that is very, very underrated because of the two teams that get overlooked because they're not nationally relevant. But in the college football space right now, they're fun. They're good for college football, and it's fun. Give me the boys, the purple Wildcats from Manhattan, Kansas, K-State over the Jayhawks in a really tight 4-point game.
Matt, you're on your own on this one. Ladies and gentlemen, for the first time since 2008, the Kansas Jayhawks are going to win the Sunflower Showdown. I believe in it, man. Lance Leipold, and you want to talk about a field rushing in a rivalry game that's worthy of it, this is it. Look, this game, this rivalry, Lance Leipold in the past 2 years has brought this rivalry back from the grave. Every year since 2008, up until last year, Kansas State has just absolutely obliterated Kansas. But if Jason Bean plays like Lance Leipold says he's going to play, or even if Jalen Daniels somehow miraculously comes back in this and plays in this football game, I'm for it. And I think Manhattan's going to be rocking. It's going to be a night game. It's probably going to be a little chilly out there. It's perfect football weather, probably. Hold on, let me look at the forecast, because for some reason I'm very interested in this. Just, let's see. 59 degrees in Manhattan Saturday. Is that not perfect? Is that not just absolutely football in a microcosm right there?
They're playing in Lawrence?
They're playing in Lawrence, not Manhattan. Matt wants to change his mind, doesn't he?
No. You said you gave the forecast for Manhattan.
Oh, sorry. They're in Lawrence. Sorry, the forecast for Lawrence is 59 degrees on Saturday. But this is not the Weather Channel. This is a football podcast. But seriously, that's perfect football weather. I just think that this is the year, man. Like, Kansas is building to something. We talk about this all the time, not really on the show, but kind of amongst ourselves. Lance Leipold is in a perfect position with the way that Kansas is trending right now to get them to be a top dog in the Big 12 after this year. He is. And that's including with Utah, Colorado, and the Arizona schools incoming. He is doing good things in Lawrence, Kansas. He's got 7 wins already. Kansas has an opportunity. If they win every game the rest of the season, including the bowl game, this is the first time for Kansas to get a double-digit win season since Mark Mangino won the Orange Bowl in 2007 in Kansas in that wild, crazy season that was 2007. And I believe in Lance Leipold. I'm all for the Jayhawks in this football game. I am taking Rock Chalk, baby. All right. SEC Network, 7:30. Number no one, because they're not ranked. Sorry. 6-4 Kentucky on the road, 4-6 South Carolina. The fact that we're picking this game tells you that this is not the greatest national week of games. Over-under in this football game is 54.5. Kentucky is favored by 1.5. So it's basically a pick 'em with the lean to the road team. This game is in Columbia, however. But get us going.
Surprise, surprise, Columbia, South Carolina. One of the toughest places to play in the country. Very underrated. I've been there a couple times. When they play teams that aren't Georgia, fans usually stay till the end of the fourth quarter, and it's pretty rocking. So I'm going to take South Carolina, and I think they actually win pretty big. I know Kentucky's a good football team. They haven't had a terrible year, but they are, I don't know, man. Like, I watched them play against Alabama. Alabama pretty much had their way with them on offense, and I don't think Alabama has a really good offense. Jalen Milroe's coming to his own, but South Carolina's offense is really good too. You saw what they did against Vanderbilt. Spencer Rattler, say what you want about South Carolina this season. Spencer Rattler's been good. He's not a first-round pick. If the Falcons take him in the first round, I'm going to throw away my Falcons fan card, but he's still a good quarterback, especially a very good college quarterback, especially for South Carolina. Shane Beamer is pretty much fighting for his job right now, so I think they come out shooting. And I think they win pretty big. I think they win by at least 2 touchdowns, maybe even 3. So South Carolina big, and a little side prediction, Mark Stoops going to Iowa end of the year. Calling it now. Matt, you know,
so I'm with you on the Stoops to Iowa. It leads me to believe John Summerall goes to Kentucky. Just got that feeling.
Former
little,
alum,
little
former
old
alum.
Man from Troy.
I didn't realize he went to Kentucky until you said that last night in the group message, by the way.
Yeah, John Summerall would be a great fit there.
Yeah, he was the DC there.
Back to my point, why would you take the Mississippi State job? You could get bigger and better things. Anyways, this is actually a game I've been stewing on this whole time that we've been sitting here. I've been thinking about it because Ooh, man, like, talk about two programs that are trending in opposite directions and not in a good way, because really, to me, Kentucky's kind of on quit watch. Like, they really didn't show up. And I know Alabama is coming into form. They didn't show up really on either side of the ball on Saturday. I mean, Devin Leary didn't look very good. Ray Davis looked very average as a running back. Mark Stoops, ever since the Georgia game, has felt a little checked out of what's going on there. Maybe he is trying to get over to Iowa. Maybe he's just acknowledging that he is tapped out on the potential that he can get out of his team in Kentucky, and that there's some boosters that are a little annoyed that he's making $8.5 million to coach there right now and them win, you know, fighting for eight wins. Look, I gotta think that Beamer right now is trending upward with South Carolina, because this is what South Carolina always does. I mean, they didn't play very well against Jacksonville State a couple weeks ago, and then they blow the doors off of Vandy. I mean, I know it's Vandy, and I've been saying that it's Vandy, but look, just irrationally, I'm gonna go South Carolina because it's at home. Williams-Brice is tough night game in Williams-Brice. Give me South Carolina. Kentucky's going to wind up winning this game, but give me the Cocks.
Sorry, I had to erase Kentucky from the scorecard here, because I 100% thought Matt was going to pick Kentucky. So we're going Cocks across the board, all the way across the board. I'm picking South Carolina as well.
Kentucky's winning.
Yeah, I'm with Matt. I would not be surprised if Kentucky won this game, but like I said earlier, last week was a get right spot for South Carolina. And again, it's Vandy. I'm not putting stock into it, but it was a get right spot and they got right. Spencer Rattler looked good. They destroyed Vanderbilt. I was honestly shocked by that because of the way South Carolina has looked this year. Like Matt said, South Carolina with Shane Beamer kind of does this at the end of every season. So it kind of feels that way. And I'm with Matt. I think Kentucky looks a little checked out. I mean, they just blew out Mississippi State. But beating Mississippi State this year is like beating Vandy. Just pointless, to be honest with you. It is. So, Williams-Brice, we talk about it all the time. I've never gotten to experience it. It's on my bucket list because it is absolutely the most underrated atmosphere in all of college football. And I will stand on that hill till I die. That is one of the best atmospheres in all of college football. It's such a hostile environment. That fan base, man, if they brought in the right guy and got South Carolina to the spot of where Spurrier had them in his time there, that place is a program waiting to explode and a fan base waiting for things to just click. And I think they're going to win this weekend. I really do. I don't believe Devin Leary has the ability to go on a road in a hostile environment like this and make plays. South Carolina's defense is not good, so Ray Davis could have a big day on the ground. But Spencer Rattler at home and Spencer Rattler on the road is a different quarterback. The South Carolina team at home is a different South Carolina team than they are on the road. And I just think Williams-Brice at night does not bode well at all for Kentucky. And I'm going to take South Carolina to win, and I'm going to take South Carolina to win by 10. Like, I actually truly believe that South Carolina has the ability to get away from Kentucky in this football game. And then we get the Mark Stoops to Iowa whole cycle started. Last game of the week, number 5. And one more disclaimer, I've already said it 4 times. I'll say it again. This is Monday. Rankings come out tomorrow, so this is unchanged. Number 5, 10-0, Washington Huskies going on the road. Oregon State, number 12, 8-2. EJ Uiagalelei versus Michael Penix. By the way, guys, Michael Penix already has 3,600 yards this year. That's unreal. But Oregon State, I did not know this. Oregon State's a 1.5-point favorite. And the over-under in this game is 63.5. I'm just going to go ahead and say pound that over. I can't believe that. Oregon State's favorite in this football game.
Wow, that's bizarre.
Yeah, like I did not think that they would be favored, but 7:30 on ABC. That means a 4:30 kickoff out in Corvallis. Going to be a chilly one. 51 degrees at kickoff. Witt, get us going.
I've had this one flagged all year since Washington started breaking out, especially after that Oregon win. This is where Washington loses and goes in with one loss to play Oregon in the Pac-12 championship. But the fact that Oregon State is 12 at home and they're favored, I'm picking Washington. Too trendy for me. Way too trendy. Washington's coming into this game. Couple of close wins. Very, very don't look like the normal Washington team we saw at the beginning of the season. Oregon State's rolling, coming off a 62-13 win over Stanford. I think they're going to win the game. I think it's going to be really close. I think it's going to be a really good game. I think Oregon State's a good football team, a very well-coached football team. Jonathan Smith, phenomenal coach. He's going to get a big job at some point, too. But I think Michael Penix, they've been finding ways to win games. They played in a lot of tight games. They're very battle-tested this year. I do think that they get this win. I think they win the game in tight fashion, maybe in double overtime, same as Duke or UNC over Duke. Matt, who you got?
And I just found out the Beavs were favored. I've been riding Beavers this whole time. Wit. That feels a little too trendy for me. I'm gonna do it anyways. Corvallis, Oregon is not an easy place to play. It's been a place where dreams have gone to die in the past. Back when USC was rolling, Oregon State was always a place that they didn't really want to go play. The Civil War always gets a little testy when it's in Corvallis, Oregon. It's never a place that anybody wants to go play in. And I'll tell you why Oregon State is probably favored by 1.5. Washington's going to have to stop them. And Washington's defense, quite frankly, has not been great this year. They've been good in spurts, but overall, not been really impressed with the Huskies on defense. Their offense has been carrying them to wins. I mean, this past week, that Utah game felt a little too close to me. It was in Seattle. And I feel like Washington is a wounded animal that is trying to limp to the finish line, only to get slaughtered by Ducks. And it just feels like it's time. They're going to have to take the L. They'll stop playing so tight. Then maybe they'll loosen up a little bit. But I it's coming at some point. They're going to lose. I think it's this weekend. Give me the Beavs over the Huskies.
I agree. I'm with Matt. I don't care if this is trendy. Oregon State is a good football team. They are a good football team. And Jonathan Smith, I'm actually going to go out on a limb and disagree with you guys. Even with the whole Pac-12 situation, Jonathan Smith is an Oregon State guy. Born and bred. He is an Oregon State guy. And I think that's why he's been so successful at Oregon State, is because he knows what it takes to win at that program. This is the biggest game in Corvallis in a long time. And not to mention, do they get Civil War at home next week?
No.
They do not?
No.
I thought it was in Corvallis last year. But this is a huge, I don't think that Oregon State is mathematically out of the Pac-12 championship yet. Because Washington still has to play the Apple Cup next week too. And Oregon still has to come play Oregon State, has to play Oregon State in Civil War. Give me the Beavers. I think DJ Uiagalelei is going to have a great game. Like Matt said, Washington's kind of got that floundering aspect to them. They're trying to limp to the finish line and make it, and they've had to skate by some games. And they have. That's what good football teams do. They've skated by. Utah's a good football team. Washington's defense is better than people think it is. It's not great, but it's better than people give it credit for. But I think on the road, with the crowd behind them, the orange and black in Corvallis, I think DJU will have a great game. Pound the over. This game is absolutely going over 63.5 points. But give me the Beavs. Love riding the Beavs. Oregon State beats Washington at home. Stays in the Pac-12 championship conversation, the New Year's Six conversation, and puts Washington's playoff hopes on the line.
For the record, Oregon State is fourth in the Pac-12 right now behind Washington, Oregon, and Arizona. And Arizona beat Oregon State by 3 a couple weeks ago. So
they did.
Good for you,
Jed Fish.
They need Arizona to lose to Utah this weekend. If that happens, and then they win out, which means beating Washington at home and then winning at Oregon, they will go to the Pac-12 championship against Washington. But it's a lot that's got to happen. Arizona's been good.
It is. Hasn't the Pac-12 been so fun this year?
It's been a fun conference.
It's been awesome. Like, we shit all over the Pac-12, and this is such a great swan song for the Pac-12, dude. Like, we're a Southern podcast, but shout out to everybody out west. Like, you guys are playing some good football.
It's BS that they're getting rid of it. Oregon State deserves a place in Power 5 football. Washington State deserves a place in Power 5 football. Pac-12 administrators that thought, oh, it'd be a better job. It's a better idea for UCLA to go play in New Jersey, Michigan, Pennsylvania, or Ohio. Go sit on your thumbs, you dumb morons.
There's
and
my
go
cut.
Join your friends down in Starkville.
There's my cut them off for the week. Money. Cutting off money.
Money, 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 money. Money.
And greed.
But we love money.
Because the millionaires just need to make more money.
I thought you said creed, not greed.
Oh, cutting off creed, too.
I'm so sick of Creed.
I'm so sick of Creed.
Oh, look at me. I'm so sick of hearing about Creed. I don't give a shit about this reunion tour.
It's the Creed resurgence, boys. Winners listen to Creed. It's just a fact. Minnesota Vikings started playing Creed. 5-game winning streak. Look, longest winning streak in the NFL.
Creed. Congratulations. They beat the Falcons.
Texas Rangers. World Series champion, Texas Rangers. Creed.
Creed is getting the love that Three Doors Down deserves. And I won't stand for it.
I feel like the problem is Three Doors Down got that love back whenever they had a relevant period. Creed was never well loved.
Creed is just a worse Nickelback.
The fact of the matter is neither of these bands will ever be as good or legendary as the nine masked men of Slipknot.
Gross.
Well, no, I mean, Slipknot's a household name in metal. I mean, even people that don't listen to metal have heard of Slipknot.
Yeah, because they're scared of them.
Yeah. I saw one picture on Keys' computer and I had nightmares for weeks.
All it is a clown in a fire suit who hits a drum made out of a steel trash can with a baseball bat.
Dude, I peed myself at clown. Stop talking.
when you say that out loud, who escaped the insane asylum and said, hey, this will be fun and we'll call it art?
Slipknots are legends, dude.
Thank you guys so much for tuning into Rowdy Southern Saturday. If you enjoyed the episode, please give us a 5-star rating on Spotify and Apple Music, and follow our social media at Rowdy Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.